We want to continue our overview of the Bible, our look at trying to get the big picture of things as we, and you know, we're zeroing in. We're catching some details, but obviously not all of them. And one of the things, if you are not that familiar with some of the things we talk about, I hope we pique your interest and we, you know, get you to dig in and study a little more on these things. And also, when you do get involved in a study of these things in greater detail, I hope you remember this overview, this big picture, and you try to see, where does this fit in? How does it relate to the story as a whole? The Bible, in a sense, it is a collection of a lot of great stories. You know, David and Goliath, the walls of Jericho. These are standalone, great interest stories. But if that's all we see, even if we take each one of those stories and we make some good application of it, we've missed something very important. The Bible is the story of our redemption. It is the story of how God, after man messes it up, man sins and is kicked out of the Garden of Eden, separated from God, cut off from the tree of life. It is the story of His working through the centuries, working through the nations and the development of Israel, and the giving of His law, then the bringing of Christ to bring us back to Him. Don't ever miss, don't lose sight of that Genesis 3 and Revelation 22, or 21 and 22. In Revelation of Genesis 3, the tree of life, as man is cut off from it. The ground is cursed. The man, the woman cursed. To the dust you'll return. Revelation 21 and 22. The tears are wiped away. God is with man. There is the tree of life, and its fruit is ever in season. And He says there is no more curse. We've come full circle. How do we get there? Well, that's what we're trying to emphasize, at least in the general way. Remember our 17 points. Real quickly, we have, let's say them together. Before the flood, scattering of the people, patriarchs, exodus from Egypt, wandering in the wilderness, invasion and conquest of Canaan, judges, united kingdom, divided kingdom, Judah alone, captivity, return and rebuilding, years of silence, life of Christ, early church, letters to Christians. I want to, if there were more time, you know, if this were like a two-quarter study, I would drill a little bit more on some of these passages, you know, trying to make sure we learn all of these. But I want to encourage you to take, as I've put it, I've got it in your notes, the handout material, try to learn where each one of these breaks down in the Bible story. If you're wanting to look at, you know, the wandering in the wilderness, you know, the Numbers 15 to Deuteronomy 34, learn those types of things. I think you'll find them to be very helpful to you. Now, when we think about the Bible story, the fourth one, the patriarchs, has four parts to it. It is the story of the development of Israel. It is the story of how that God makes the promise to Abraham, I'm going to make of you this great nation. And out of from this great nation, or this great nation, I'll give them the land of Canaan. But ultimately, this is for the blessing of all nations. And we've been watching as Abraham's grandson, Jacob, was also called Israel. And he had 12 sons. And those 12 sons became 12 tribes, and a nation developed. God led those people out of Egypt, brought them to Sinai, entered into a covenant with them. The nation was formed, this nation with the law as its guide, with God among them through the tabernacle. And then, as Moses dies, Joshua takes over, and they receive that land. But as we pointed out in our study of Judges Wednesday night, what we see so often from here on is the breaking of the covenant. is they so often fail to do what God has said. And they bring upon themselves suffering, oppression. And the judges, they would sin, they'd be oppressed. Finally, they would be driven back to God, and He would give them deliverance. And they would enjoy peace for a time, and they'd fall away. Well, we come to the period of the United Kingdom. And let's think back, 1 Samuel 8, question number 2 in our lesson today. Why did they decide they wanted a king? All right, they wanted to be like the nations around them, have a king and who could judge them, who could lead them in battle. You know, they, you know, you think about one of the things I said Wednesday night, and I think this is so true. They wanted a king to lead them in battle. They're being oppressed again. They think the problem is they don't have a king. They look around. The nations have kings. We don't have a king. What he basically says is, you really had a king, you just haven't been listening to him. You haven't been obeying me. But God's going to give them the king, and that's what we're going to look at today, just to overview this. And I want you to see the places to find this, and there's a couple of things I want to point out. You know, you have three kings. You just need, if you don't know these, Saul, David, and Solomon. That's, you've got to know that. And I had a mistake in the material. I noticed that I had Saul, 1 Chronicles 9. That should be chapter 10. And then David should start in 11. 1 Samuel tells us about Saul. Take note of how little attention is given to Saul in 1 Chronicles. It pretty much tells us about him dying. There is some more about Saul in his genealogy. Earlier in the book, the first 9 chapters of 1 Chronicles are largely genealogies. But very little. David, the entire book of 2 Samuel is about his reign as king. Then you've got the bulk of 1 Chronicles about him. And actually, and I think I pointed out this, in the material on Saul, it could really be said, from 1 Samuel 16 onward, the focus is really on David. David is the key character, not Saul. This is where you find his reign. But the attention has shifted to David. Jesus is often called the son of David. The messianic element is so strong here. Saul reigns for the exact same length of time as David. But the Bible doesn't give the great emphasis to his reign. Solomon, you see the material that is there. The wisdom literature, you're not going to pick up a lot of historical information about the kings. But you know, do take note that many of the Psalms are written by David. Most of the Proverbs by Solomon, not all of them, but also you've got Ecclesiastes and Song of Solomon from that period. If you don't know this period of Bible history, you really need to. Several reasons. One, there are a lot of things that refer back to this. You know, you're going to be reading other accounts, New Testament stories, other Old Testament stories. They're going to take you back to things that happen here. Secondly, David, in particular, is already alluded to. He is the type of Christ. He's the shadow. Ezekiel, when he wants to speak of the coming of the Christ, he will speak of the return of David. You know, you're not going to understand what is being said in Ezekiel, or even in the New Testament, if you don't know something about David and his reign as king. And then thirdly, they're just some great practical stories, things with great, you know, with great principles for us to learn. How long does the period of the United Kingdom last? How much? 120 years. You know, give or take, allowing for a little bit of rounding, what's the number given for all three kings? 40 years. You know, so, you know, when I say a little bit of rounding, you know, I doubt they all died on the exact 40th anniversary. So it could have been a little bit short of 40, a little over the 40, and just rounded to 40. But this is a period of about 120 years. And so it's a, you know, relatively short period as far as some of these go. But the first king was Saul. Here's a question. Who wrote the books of 1 and 2 Samuel? That's the right answer. I don't know either. I know this. It wasn't Samuel, was it? He dies before the first book is complete. I believe it was one of the prophets somewhere along the way. God raised up a man who wrote 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings, which at one time were one book. That would have been one big book back when they were as one book. But Saul is selected to be the first king. He is anointed by Samuel. You want to talk about a great and very instructional character study. Watch Saul from the beginning of his reign to the end. Look at him when he is selected. But let me back up a second. He is from what tribe? Benjamin. Who had Jacob long before this said would hold the scepter? Which one of his sons would have the scepter? Judah. It's interesting that with that prophecy in mind, the first king doesn't come from Judah. But the rest of them will. You know, we start though with a man from the tribe of Benjamin. And as I pointed out in number 3b, when he starts out, he's humble. He's talented. He's a man of action, it would appear. But pride took over. He disobeys. He, you know, becomes envious. He consults a medium. You know, look at 1 Samuel 9. Sometimes you get the whole thing before you start looking at details. It helps. When Samuel first gives the hint to Saul that he is going to be the man, he says, verse 21, "Am I not a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin? Why then do you speak like this to me?" Now, look at how he describes himself. Yet, if you go back to the first verse of the ninth chapter, let's read. "There was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bechereth, the son of Aphia, a Benjamite, a mighty man of power." Saul's father is described as a mighty man. How does Saul see that? He says, "I'm just nobody. I'm from a small tribe, insignificant family. I don't really matter." In chapter 10, when they've got the assembly together and they're casting the lots to say who will be the next king, and Saul has been anointed by Samuel. You know, I just kind of picture myself knowing how I can be at times. If that had been me, I'd have been kind of standing there in the crowd, you know, doing that looking around like, whoa, they've chosen the tribe of Benjamin. You know, and then they've got it down. And it's my clan, trying to act surprised when all along, man, my heart's just about to burst with pride. Where's Saul? He was over hiding among the luggage. They had to go find him and, you know, almost drag him forward. You know, look at that. what's said of him. But look at chapter 10. I mean, of First Chronicles. Chapter 10 of First Chronicles. I want you to see the summary. Verse 13. So Saul died for his unfaithfulness which he had committed against the Lord, because he did not keep the word of the Lord, and also because he consulted a medium for guidance. But he did not inquire of the Lord, therefore he killed him and turned the kingdom over to David, the son of Jesse. He turned away from the Lord. He had turned away. Chapter 15 and verse 17 of 1 Samuel. When Saul has disobeyed God, Samuel said, "When you were little in your own eyes, were you not head of the tribes of Israel? Did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel?" Pride destroys people. And it, you know, we see the story of Saul, and I think we see the specific acts of disobedience, and they're important. But it's so easy to miss what Samuel says. There was a time, he said, you were small in your own eyes. You had that humility, and you lost it. That's a killer to us, and that's something we have to fight against. We do not want to go down the road that he did. But looking at Saul, let's look at a few little things from his life. Samuel comes to him and says, "You're going to be the king." Then they gather the assembly and they select him. And then they never had a king before. What does he do? He goes back to farming. He's out plowing in the field. And a siege has come against Jabesh Gilead in 1 Samuel 11. And word came to Saul, and here's this man of action. He took a yoke of his oxen, he cut them in pieces, and he sent the pieces of the oxen throughout the land. It reminds you a little bit of Judges, when the man cut up his concubine. But in this case, he cut up oxen, and he said, "This is what I'll do to anybody's oxen that don't show up to battle." And they came to battle. They delivered the people of Jabesh Gilead. And then everybody said, "Let's get back together again." And, you know, we need to almost like re-coronate him king. When Saul was first made king, do you remember what was said about some of the people said, "Can this man save us?" They were people putting him down. He's a nobody. What was Saul's response? It didn't say a word. It just kept quiet. When they got back together after the defeat of Jabesh Gilead, some of the people were saying, "Hey, this guy's so great. Let's put to death those men that were talking bad about him." And Saul said, "Oh, no, 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 no. Nobody's dying today." Now you look at that. That's at the beginning of his reign. There were men who actually had spoken against him, you know, called him, you know, ineffective, unable. And he says, "No, no, no, we don't hurt anybody." And then watch how he becomes toward David, a man who's done nothing but lead the armies of Israel in victory. Watch the change in the man. In chapter 13, we have an act of disobedience. And then in chapter 15, we've got the one that is probably the best known. When Israel, you know, talking about it all ties together. Exodus 17, Israel has come out of Egypt. That's that period of the Exodus. And they are attacked by the Amalekites. And Joshua was sent out to lead the army of Israel in battle. And that's the occasion in which Moses was up on the mountain holding up the rod of God and pleased to God, and his arms would become tired, and Aaron and Hur would support him. And they won that day. But God said, mark it down, the Amalekites will be destroyed. Well, he said, this is the time. You're to go and utterly destroy them. Wipe them out. He did most of what God said. He killed most of the people. But he saved Agag. He saved the best of the herds and the flocks. And you know what he does? He says, well, it was the people. What? The buck stops here? Really? Not with Saul on this occasion. You know, it was always, I did my part. It was the people. The people disobeyed. People didn't quite do it all. But they were going to use it for sacrifice. And he is rebuked so strongly. And one of the great passages of the Old Testament, 1 Samuel 15, verse 22. So Samuel said, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he also has rejected you from being king. You can't substitute worship for obedience. Now, there's worship can often and often is part of obedience. Go through Leviticus. Leviticus 1 through 7, detailed instructions on sacrifices and burnt offerings. But he said, you can't just say, well, we didn't do what God said, but we'll use this for sacrifice. And boy, does that principle not still apply to us? That, you know, we can't just live any way we want, disregard God's instructions in various ways, and say, well, we're worshiping God, we're serving Him. But also, I want you to see verse 23. At this point, now later Saul will go to that medium, that the King James says, the witch of Endor. But early in his thing, and it even makes the statement there, he had tried to drive all this out of Israel. You know, in fact, that woman was afraid. She said, you know, if Saul hears about this, I could be put to death. And yet, what Samuel says is, if you're rebelling against God, you might as well be practicing witchcraft. The margin says divination. Doing your own thing. If you're stubbornly refusing to follow God, that's idolatry. The essence of idolatry is not that I have an image right here. The essence of idolatry is I'm really doing what I want to do. And that's what he's telling Saul. And he says, I'm finished with you. I'm going to get a new king. Except that it's going to be a while before that new king takes over. He doesn't say that. But in the very next chapter, he said, let's get our king. And he tells Samuel, what city did he send, or village did he send Samuel to find the next king? Bethlehem. Where was Jesus brought up? What city did he grow up in? Nazareth. But he was born where? Born in Bethlehem. He was born in the city of David. Bethlehem in the time of David was a small village. In the time of Jesus, it was a relatively small place. But this is where Jesus was born there, because that was David's hometown. And he is chosen. He is the youngest of the sons of Jesse. Chosen to be the next king. But this all takes place in a quiet, family-only ceremony. But in chapter 17, David comes to the forefront in the nation's eyes. I think there's a great contrast to be seen in chapter 11, chapter 17. Chapter 11, Jabesh-Gilead is under siege. Saul takes the oxen, cuts them up, sends the pieces out. Chapter 17, they're there in the valley of Elah, and here comes Goliath. Send the man out to fight with me. You remember how long it said they were like this? 40 days? Nothing happens. The Israel is paralyzed with fear. There's no action. They're just paralyzed. Here comes David, and David comes along. He's not considered old enough to be in the army. Now, David is not the little boy David like the little song says. I mean, he's old enough to take care of sheep in the wilderness by himself, able to fight a bear and a lion, you know, but he's young enough. Whatever age he is, he's young enough that his brothers think, you need to just go back to the sheep. You don't have any business down here with the fighting men. And David defeats Goliath. And there was a point made by Brother Waldron in his book that we sometimes think of David as he was so much braver than anybody else. It's not so much that he had more courage. He just had more faith. He said, this man is defying the armies of the living God. David has his bad moments. But you read 1 Samuel 17, and I think you will see something about the greatness of David. Not that he just fought this giant. You see a man who is upset that this uncircumcised Philistine can defy the armies of the living God. And he will say to Goliath, he said, you know, yeah, you've got your sword and your spear, your javelin. But he said, I'm coming to you in the name of God. You know, there in chapter 17, verse 45, I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. The Lord, he said, will deliver you. Verse 46, that all the earth may know that I am the great. No, he said, that they may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. David wasn't trying to become a champion that day. He was concerned about the honor of Almighty God. Too often, even when we step up to fight Goliath, we fight him sometimes for our own glory, for our own praise. David said, I want people to know there's a God in Israel. He's hurt. I mean, he's a young man, a lad, but he's bothered by that. Yeah. There's some weak moments in David's life, but what a great one this is. Well, what though this sets up is the people are excited and they praise David, and it just gets worse as he begins to be a leader in the army, and Saul becomes envious and resentful, and the rest of 1 Samuel is largely the story of a miserable man. A wretched man who wants to kill his son-in-law, who has been nothing but loyal to him. A son-in-law, a man who, Saul tries to kill David, and David on two occasions has Saul just handed to him. And he refuses to do it. The one where he's in the cave, and Saul is there, and he slips up on him and cuts off a piece of Saul's robe. And then he feels terrible about that. Most men, as his own men were saying, kill him, would have just, without hesitation, taken the head of Saul off right there. David felt guilty for cutting the robe. In chapter 26, he's being told by Abishai, kill him, kill him. He said, no. When the day comes, the Lord will take care of it. I will wait. I will be patient. And so, you know, those chapters, they play out, and there's a lot of interchange of things that happen. David finally goes over and allies himself with the Philistines for his own safety. And then at the end, chapter 31, Saul is killed. And it takes a little while. David doesn't become king immediately. In fact, in what city do we find him reigning for the first 7.5 years? Hebron, Hebron, tomato, tomato, you know. He's down in Hebron for this period, and Saul's son Ishbosheth contests the thing. Now, there are some characters in the Bible that just puzzle me. Two of them are involved in this battle between David and Ishbosheth, and that's Joab and Abner. If you were somebody that said, I need a ruthless, unprincipled, and yet genius right-hand man, you want Joab. I mean, Joab knew how to get things done. Very perceptive in many ways. But ruthless. You know, and killed more than one innocent man. Abner. Abner was the commander of Saul's army. He's the one that set up Ishbosheth. And he fights for Ishbosheth until he gets mad at Ishbosheth. And then he goes over and says, well, I'm gonna go to David's side now. But one of the things he told Ishbosheth is he said, I'm going to turn the kingdom over to David, just like the Lord said it was supposed to be. What he says is, all along, you know, I've been fighting for you, but I knew the Lord intended David to be king. You know, he would, hard to figure some of these characters. But David does finally become king, and in chapter 5, the capital becomes Jerusalem. We think of Jerusalem as being so much the center of Jewish history. It's not important at all until the time of David. More than 400 years after they've entered the land of Canaan. You know, 47 years after they have their first king, before Jerusalem becomes the capital. But it becomes the capital, and in chapter 6, David makes his great mistake of trying to carry the Ark of Covenant, the Ark of the Covenant on a cart. I want to tell you, if you haven't ever paid attention to 1 Chronicles, here's one of the great places where that makes a difference. 1 Chronicles 13 and 1 Chronicles 15 tell the same story as 2 Samuel 6. With more detail, some great details that are very important to the story. Don't ever miss that one. David had to learn the lesson. You do it the way God... Good intentions don't make up for the fact that you're not obeying God. David's intentions, when he went to move the ark, they were as honorable as they could be. He wanted the ark put back in its place of prominence. They were offering animal sacrifices. They were worshiping God with all their might, but they weren't obeying him. And Uzzah died. And it took David a while to understand why. Now, 2 Samuel 11 and 12 tells of the terrible sin of David, his attempted cover up. Sin multiplies, you know, over and over again. And from 2 Samuel 12 on, the book takes on a different tone. David pays for his sin. You talk about a great lesson in how even forgiven sins can have earthly consequences. David suffers. His family suffers. I would say to you that Israel suffers. And, you know, read those things. Study those stories. But David eventually goes the way of all the earth. And his son Solomon becomes the king. Oh, there's a battle. Adonijah, you know, wants it. David was told the sword would not depart from his house. And even as he dies, or is about to die, Adonijah's fighting with Solomon. And after David does die, Adonijah's put to death. A couple of things. One, there in 1 Samuel 15, it takes a bunch of, you know, he argues and he stubbornly resists for the longest before he finally says, I've sinned. And then when he's told there will still be consequences, what does he say? Well, go back with me and honor me and the people. I think the pride still shows. And then what does the rest of his life show? The rest of his life shows, you know, this jealousy, this envy, this, you know, failure. David is told, you know, there in 2 Samuel 12, after he said, I've sinned. Okay, God's not going to kill you, but here are the consequences. What do you see in the rest of David's life? You see Psalm 51. You see a man who spends the rest of his life preparing for the building of the temple versus that, you know, you're right, it's a good point. The two statements, they seem identical. But as you keep reading, you see two very different hearts there. And that's, it's very tragic. You know, that Saul, when he says to Samuel, you go back with me before the people and honor me before the people. I think the pride element is very key there. Well, Solomon, I hate to give him only 2 minutes, but that's all he's going to get today. Solomon starts off, you talk about a promising beginning. A man, God appears to him, said, what do you want? Ask. He said, give me wisdom to judge these people. He said, your people are a great people and I'm young, I'm inexperienced, I need help. God said, well, you could have asked for riches and law. He said, I'm going to give you wisdom. And I'm also going to give you riches and honor. And if you obey me, I'm going to give you a long life. In all likelihood, Solomon lived less than 60 years. All evidence would point to a man who was middle to upper teens when he became the king. We're not given an exact age. He reigned 40 years, so he probably died under 60. He disobeyed. Solomon's reign was great in many ways. It was prosperous. They got the temple built. The glory of God entered the temple. But what chapter 11 says is what all the Bible says. God's word is true. It comes to pass. Deuteronomy 7 is quoted where he said, don't marry these people of the land. Don't give your sons to their daughters. Don't take their daughters to your sons. They will lead you away from God. Solomon did that. It was not just that he multiplied the wives and had the 700 wives and 300 concubines. He chose these wives of the nations around him. And they led his heart away from God. Solomon, the last of the three kings of the United Kingdom, had a divided heart. And that set the stage for the kingdom to divide. It happened because he didn't obey God. The man blessed with so much wisdom did something very stupid. He quit listening to God. And that's deadly for anybody. All right. I appreciate it. Your being here, being part of this. Wednesday night, we can move on to our next lesson, begin the divided kingdom.